In a few hours, we'll be on a Borg cube without authorization.
This cube is under Romulan control.
I believe she's close to discovering who she really is. We have to get there as quickly as possible.
The journey always begins with the closing of the eyes.
What's happening to me?
You must take me to her now.
They are in some serious trouble.
Let go! Let go of me!
They are not responding.
Transfer complete.
Welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, saying this as an old friend. Cam, never call me again.
Oh. And we have a very special guest, just awakening from dreams of orchids, Waylon Snedker.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me.
Hey, great to have you back on the show. Cam, what a roller coaster Star Trek Picard it turns out to be for you and I. We're so great to have you back on the show. Waylon, you've been doing like Star Trek Discovery podcasts with us before in the past and other shows.
I think some two-parters along the way. Yeah.
So great to have you back. We'll kind of pry some of your thoughts about like your journey so far with Star Trek Picard, but maybe just off the top of the show, Cam, you and I, we had a lot of issues with last week's episode, and maybe just to maybe add some balance to it, I know for a fact, Waylon, you actually were more of a fan of last week's episode, so tell me about your journey with Star Trek Picard so far.
At first, it was a little slow, and I think the last episode is where I really got hooked, just seeing Seven of Nine again, and Icheb, briefly.
Yeah, that brings all the fans out, is Icheb, I know.
And you aptly put it, Seven of Nine's doom. Gunslinging through the casino.
Right.
Kind of a Duke Nukem / Doom, you know, like FPS sort of deal.
Wolfenstein.
Yeah. Wolfenstein, yeah.
What was the Blake one, the space guy? I don't remember what his name was. No. Blake Stone, I think.
Seven of Wolfenstein.
Ooh, good one. Good one.
Sorry. But the last one, though, episode 5, it gripped you, though, in a way. Like, it kind of maybe energized the show in a way that you had not seen before when they're hanging out in, say, French vineyards.
Yeah, as I was telling you earlier today, that I was worried that it was going to be all on Earth, and thank goodness that it was not. And
the ghost of Robert would have been rolling in the mud with Picard for 7 more episodes.
Come to the mystical mud!
And it just felt like the pacing sped up. Although I will say about this episode, it slowed. It felt really slow again.
Mm-hmm.
That's just okay. I'll just get it out of the way. I love this episode like 10 times more than I did the previous episode. Like, this is the kind of stories that I want to hear from Picard, because I've been wondering a lot, you know, like, why do this series again? Why reprise this character? And I finally feel as if I'm getting a little bit of that. I mean, there's stuff that I can pick apart in this episode, which, for, you know, a factual point, this is 53 minutes long. This is the longest episode of Star Trek Picard by far, like even more so than the premiere. I'm liking that we get to sit with a lot of these characters a lot more. I think we can get into where their character journeys are going from here. But what is your initial take of this episode beyond that it's a little bit slower than Seven of Wolfenstein?
Well, I'm glad we now know Narek's secret lover name, which is Ryan, or just Ryan for people who don't know the accent.
Jerry Ryan.
I agree with you about Picard, and sort of, you know, you can see why he seems really tame now, and you can see he's got PTSD, not just because he messed up with this whole conflict before, but also because there's like the Borg issues.
Right.
So that's pretty interesting. And I'm so glad that they updated the Borg cube look.
Right.
To be like more modern.
I wish was expecting they went retro. Like, I wanted it to be like 1960s sort of version of a Borg cube. That would be fun.
Just a box. Like a cardboard box that's been spray painted gray.
And on some a string. Old circuit boards, you know, just falling out of the ceiling. Yeah.
And I actually didn't even, I feel really silly. I haven't watched TNG for like a couple of years, but seeing Hugh. And I was like, Hugh, like, who is that? And then it all came full circle. He was the, or I could be totally wrong, but isn't he? He's the guy that got sent back with the virus?
Well, they debated whether to give him the virus or not, and Picard ultimately decided not to do the virus thing.
Okay.
He was hoping that a taste of individuality would be all that would be needed to...
And they could rise up.
Or...
Yeah.
And so I guess what that ended up with, ultimately, though, what we found out in Descent Part 2 is that it kind of turned into a bit of an offshoot sort of Borg situation. I think they were calling themselves the Borg Cooperative that Hugh had to eventually become leader of.
They grew a lot of vegetables.
At the cooperative, yeah. But yeah, I wonder if this rings true with his ultimate journey. It's curious to get into that, though, because ultimately he becomes a Federation citizen, I guess, at this point. But
is he, though? Like
he said he was.
Yeah.
So, Cam, let's start to your initial thoughts on this episode.
I thought this was a solid episode. I didn't love it by any stretch, but I definitely thought it was a step up from last week and definitely felt like a little more of a... pushing me back onto the direction of liking where the series is going after being kind of questioning if this show really knew what it was doing the last couple weeks, where it would introduce these sort of solo episodes that had maybe a little side plot. But when you really sit and think about it, was this necessary? Not really. It was more wheel spinning to get us to a MacGuffin or to a character that acted as a MacGuffin. This one actually felt like it was tied into the direction of what the show seemed to be pointing to from episode one. So that was nice.
Was it just frustrating that maybe it took six episodes to get to this point?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things that frustrated me. We'll get into in depth more later. But one thing is, I don't know that the show has yet made a great argument for its supporting cast, where once again, it's like, hey, yeah. B-team, stay on the ship. I'll deal with this.
Hey, B-team or XB-team?
Yeah, sure. XB-team. That'd be more fitting. Sorry. Yeah, I should have dropped that one. That would have been a far better reference. Also, I just think it's really tough in movies or TV to pull off the analyzing a dream and just repeating the dream over and over again and really pulling me into that.
Yeah, as far as that goes, the only time I've actually been like pulled in, sucked in, was maybe Michel Gondry in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, where it actually felt like I was watching a dream.
Sure.
I'm somebody who likes to tell people about my dreams, which I think bores the hell out of most people. But to me, like, I find dreams fascinating because I think it does tap into maybe whatever your thoughts are any given day. This is, again, during that sequence, Wayland, I don't know, I think we kind of snickered a little bit. Did it not feel a little bit silly as we walk around in this orchid sort of greenhouse with the faceless father and a very overt Pinocchio illusion going on as she's being worked on the work table? I don't know. What are your thoughts?
And like, you're talking about the giant whale, right?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's where we found her, inside his ribcage.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And aren't like
Grace,
orchids...
It was Grace, right? Yeah.
Aren't orchids like a metaphor for, I mean, can't you clone orchids or, you know, combine them and create thousands of different
versions? Chris Cooper tried to do it in an adaptation, and it was a very difficult process. So
yeah, I thought that was like, it seemed a little on the nose.
But I totally missed an orchid connection there.
Really? Okay. So,
good for you.
Well, isn't there like millions of types of orchids, and she could be potentially like the millionth prototype or sorry, not prototype because that'd be the first, but like iteration.
Sure.
Also, serious question. Is her bear also named Soji?
I didn't pick up on that.
Like somebody mumbles like
her stuffed animal, right?
My bear Soji. And I was like, what? She named her bear Soji?
Okay.
Okay.
I can imagine myself naming my own stuffed animal after me.
Tyler,
of course.
Tyler, yeah.
All of them.
I thought yours was named Cam.
That's just the life-size doll in the closet. Sorry. But you were the one that brought up the dream stuff, Cam.
Yeah.
Break it down for me. Why is this maybe not working for you so much?
I just don't know that in these types of stories that involve breaking down dreams, and I'm not just picking on this episode, I think it's, as I said, very difficult to do. You just keep repeating something, but ultimately it's resolved when the writers are just like, okay, now. Like, it doesn't feel like you're actually doing the work.
Well, because there's really no such thing as dream logic.
No.
You know, there's no logic at all when you are kind of in that REM sort of state. And,
right.
You know, there's been episodes like, say, Night Terrors on TNG, which I can actually buy that because I think cinematically it was very effective in how they were making horror feel very visceral in that situation.
Right.
This, it felt like more of a bit of a segue to finally get us to a plot point that we're trying to reach for.
Right. And I mean, I think of the episode Phantasms as well, where Data was having like the dreams or the nightmares, I guess. And, like, there was a surrealism to them that made them really visually dazzling, at least. Whereas these ones, I was kind of like, well, they're fine.
Yeah. And also, let's recall the Birthright two-parter. That's, I think it's mostly in part two, if I recall correctly, that Data is going through the dream sequence where he's, you know, hanging out with blacksmith Dr. Noonien Soong. Is that ringing any bells for you, Waylon?
Not at all.
Okay.
That's my favorite Noonien Soong.
Yeah.
Do you think he'll make a return on Picard?
I think Brent Spiner's due for at least one more appearance on Star Trek Picard. Okay, well, why are they blacking out Sochi's father's
blacksmithing
face?
Blacksmithing out.
Blacksmithing out Sochi's father's face, Waylon.
I don't know. No idea.
Does the intrigue of dream dissemination not really get you going for episode 7 next up? I don't know.
Not really. I got lost, and they went to the, what was the, Zalmak?
Sure, the meditation area?
Yeah, Zalmak meditation area. I don't understand.
I had Nakvar, so who knows?
Why would that unlock the dreams and memories of a synthetic? That was like...
Well, it's kind of like the old Vulcan mind meld. It's a new way of just getting the information you need that's grounded in mysticism you can never understand.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. They're at least trying to apply some sort of cinematic tension to a situation where we kind of inevitably know that Narek's going to be able to retrieve whatever information that he's looking for, which is two red moons on a planet that has a lot of electrical occurrences. Does this not sound like Exeball from Return or The Rise of Skywalker?
I mean, sure.
Sure. I don't know. They're all being made at the same time.
Yeah,
I don't think they're leeching off of it
right.
Anyway. But
yeah,
that's what my mind went to. So the thing is, we're kind of going back and forth between like kind of the character-based stuff, which maybe worked for us a little bit more versus the story-based stuff. One of the things that did confuse me was apparently Bruce Maddox revealed that the reason he created Sochi and Daj was to unveil this sort of conspiracy about the synths. I don't think he said that explicitly. He did say that, you know, the reason why he's out on expedition is to find out that there's some sort of conspiracy. I don't recall him explicitly saying that that's why he created these two android twins.
Hmm. Well, Narek and all the Romulans are saying that she's the destroyer.
So I'm curious how that goes, but it's not exactly the main point as to why I'm watching. Like, this story unfolds, you know? And it was interesting because did not Narek, or I think it was Rizzo that said, like, we're trying to find the home world, at a certain point. Also, where is Rizzo? Is Rizzo still, like, a holographic projection coming from Starfleet? She is appearing as a Romulan at this point. I'm very...
She has to be there, right? Because they were making physical contact. Like, they were bumping up against each other and stuff.
She's snatching his Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, so she's there.
His Romulan Rubik's Cube, you know?
She's 100% there, so I don't know. It's a little confusing.
Yeah, so they just didn't establish... I guess it was two episodes where... Remember, she said that he smells like carnal sort of stuff, which was a weird thing.
Carnal stuff, that was the exact line of dialogue.
She said the word carnal.
She definitely did.
That's a weird thing for a sister to say to her brother when she's smelling him, but
so is she like doing some sort of cosmetic surgery on her ears constantly going back and forth between Starfleet and the cube?
It sounds like a silly question, but that's what I was wondering as well. I have to believe she's on like leave and like Commodore O is like, go on some sort of mission right now. Like I'm kind of confused about what Rizzo is up to. And I don't try to get too hung up on these kinds of things. But the thing is, like, they made such a big deal out of like her being a mole within Starfleet. It just... It takes me out of the moment a little bit when I'm watching this.
And I don't really know what she's doing because she just seems to spend all of her time in like Narek's quarters, like taunting him. You don't actually get to see what she is doing beyond that. So I would like to know, is this character doing anything else on this cube? Is she's
working on that Romulan Rubik's Cube, Romulan Rubik's Borg Cube,
She can't be a hologram at all.
I don't think so because... No. Yeah, she's, like, literally grabbing his, like, belongings. She was also in that Borg cube.
But couldn't holograms do that? Like, didn't the Doctor from Voyager interact with things all the time?
She was, like, the way that they made it in her first appearance, she was literally passing through, like, Narek and passing through, like, the desk, I think.
That's right.
So, which, you know, if that was the case, I think you're just sending mixed signals to audiences and being... I think what they're trying to establish, though, is, like... Rizzo is there. We still don't know what her name is, I don't believe. And has Rizzo ever
Stockard-Channing.
Has Rizzo ever actually referred to her brother as Narek? Because now we're finding out that he has like a name for outsiders and a name for family. And
yeah.
I wonder if I go back to episode two, we hear her refer to him as my brother or refer to him as Narek. I don't know.
It better result in something because this whole brother, sister, brother, sister. Yeah, it's oh boy, this gets a little old.
Yeah, I know.
There better be some sort of like, I don't know, reveal at least with her name or something where we're like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, like, well, what were we calling her? Rizomulan?
Sure.
You know, yeah. That'd be great if her name was literally Rizomulan.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. So we're getting this all through. You bring up the side characters, Cam. And I will say this, like with regards to Raffi, I don't think we felt that her scene with Gabriel last week, her son, was earned.
Well acted, not earned.
Yeah, yeah. But I actually think the sequence with her going back and forth with her old captain friend, I think this is the best showcase for the Raffi character yet. It made her super competent. She was good with, kind of putting her cards on the table and explaining what's going on. It was like a lighthearted scene, which I think this character needs at this point as well. It's my favorite Raffi moment that we've gotten yet, and I think they actually pulled it off effectively. And sometimes I get the feeling from Star Trek Picard is that they're trying to pull something off, whether it's like comedy or seriousness, and it doesn't quite get there. I think you and I pointed to that, Picard doing the really campy French accents last week.
Yeah.
Did that work for you, Waylon, by the way?
Nope, not at all.
Okay. I guess I kind of set you up for an answer when...
It seems like he wants to do that.
That's exactly what we said last week.
Because he's done that French accent 3 times now, hasn't he?
I think he was doing like an exaggerated campy one last week, whereas when he was on the vineyard and speaking to his dog number one, I think he was trying to French, even though it was like I don't know many French people that speak with the Patrick Stewart accent. So
yeah, and I think he was doing an accent with the Three Musketeers when he was reading.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
But kind of going back to Raffi, I loved that scene where she saves the day when she calls up her friend. What was the friend's name? M or something like that?
Ow. Like James Bond?
Yeah.
Emily? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm probably making that up, but like...
I didn't catch a name, but I'll go with that.
That was pretty cool. That showed that she's like somebody of importance and has friends.
And if we're talking about kind of the supporting characters, they are... Okay, so after one... Agnes kills her life partner last week. She's hooking up with the hot soccer playing captain of the ship at this point.
When I saw him playing soccer, I was like, are we going to get the Star Trek Picard version of the basketball scene in Alien Resurrection?
Oh, and we get Chris Noble just like kicking the goal in backwards.
Or like Agnes comes in and just starts heading balls like through the net after another.
That'd be amazing. That'd be great. There. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the thing. It's like, I feel like so much of the series, it wants to do these character things, but it keeps getting distracted by plots. And I'm not necessarily referring to this episode. I just mean as a wider spectrum of what Picard has been doing. So that when we get these like character-based moments here between like Agnes and Rios, I'm just not feeling anything in it because I'm like, what? Like, did these two have that much of a spark?
Yeah, there's no build. They had one eye glance and locked eyes.
We saw them talking together in a previous episode for a bit, but... I mean, the jump from there to here was kind of like, oh, okay, I have zero emotional reaction to this.
Yeah, I like the characters independently of each other.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not intrigued by whatever chemistry that they're trying to put on screen, if any exists at all.
Well, that's actually an interesting point, because let's remove Picard from the equation. Which of the supporting characters do you think have the best chemistry together?
I feel like the Jeopardy music should be playing right now.
I know, right.
As I'm debating this, I would probably say Cristobal and Raffi.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
It certainly isn't Narek and Sochi.
No,
God, no. I would say Rios or Cristobal with all of the other Cristobals.
Yeah, well, you got to remove, I think, Eleanor, because he doesn't really connect with anyone other than Picard.
Yeah.
I think I agree. Like Rios and Raffi are probably the two that we've seen them have the most human moments, whereas the ones between Agnes and Rios feel a little more like almost like soap opera written. Mm-hmm. Like they don't feel like they're grounded in humanity.
It almost feels as if the writers wrote all the scripts in one go.
Mm-hmm.
as opposed to letting the actors naturally feel kind of where the characters were going in their own journeys. And that's, you know, you can debate whether or not, you know, we have a plan, say, right, in the writer's room, versus let's see how things unfold in a natural sort of way, which is what I think happened on television when you were producing 22 episodes, 26 episodes in the case of Star Trek TNG, a season. You just had to write, and then see what Jell-O would stick to the wall and go with that further into the season.
And you would see how, you know, partway through a season, they would really lock onto a character and find they really understood how to write them, and suddenly that character would get to be more and more interesting. Whereas I feel like the way Star Trek is being produced now, they come up with these long-form arcs, and they're like, okay, that is our story. And if they don't lock into the characters early and figure out how to use them, and I think Discovery was actually pretty good at that with characters like Tilly, for example, or Michael Burnham, but you saw season one Discovery, how Ash Tyler felt adrift a lot of the time, and how even like Stamets felt a little, you know, out in the cold in season two. But here, I feel like almost everyone except for Patrick Stewart is out in the cold. It's kind of weird where, like, I like them. It's not that I don't like these characters. It's that I feel like when I get to the end of an episode, they don't really contribute a lot that is that interesting for us to mull over.
Well, Waylon, do you think it's just a fact because Patrick Stewart is just kind of this utter gravity that they're all drawn into, and how can you really compete with him in terms of even just that nostalgia factor, which I usually try to push against with these kinds of revivals, though? But I mean, do you think it's kind of like a losing game no matter what they try to do with the supporting characters that we don't recognize, whether it's a Hugh or a Seven? Maybe those are moments that stand out to us more than like trying to make something really, really intriguing happen between like Narek and Sochi.
Well, I don't know. Look at all the reactions from Picard every time he has a confrontation with a character. It's always the same, him being sort of deflated. And I think that doesn't create any interesting dynamic for the characters that are coming up against him, because it's always like, I'm super angry at you, or you've betrayed me, or whatever. And he's just like, oh, Raffi, don't go. Like, it's always the same thing. So
it's not the same dynamic that he would have with Jonathan Frakes, you know, and Number One back in the TNG era.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't want to constantly compare this to TNG, because I've totally resolved the fact that this is not meant to be, you know, Star Trek TNG Part 2.
And it feels very different. So,
it really does, you know, but it is a very different dynamic when you have one absolute lead character and maybe they just haven't quite figured out how to get all the other characters playing off him in a way that's going to have us engage, as opposed to just think like, I wish I was back with Patrick Stewart right now.
I think it's also really tough in that all of these characters have tragic backstories, it seems. And the thing is, when you have Picard sitting there looking at a monitor, the locutus face, like over top of his, the entire audience comes alive because this means so much to them.
We all reacted to that when we were watching it together.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, like, emotionally, we connect to this moment.
You guys were laughing. I don't know.
Because it was awesome.
I laughed because you guys were laughing. I was like,
I admired the, like, pasting the screen face over his. Like, I just love that technique. Okay. It did make me laugh, but it was out of joy, not out of it was like a giddy mockery.
I agree. It was laughter out of joy.
Yeah. Okay. But when that happens, we bring so much to it because of all of our connections, the previous series, whereas like the other characters, you know, last week, like Raffi with her son, you're like, oh yeah, okay,
it meant nothing to me.
Yeah, like you don't have that background. It's like one character has a really unfair advantage in this. Well, I guess a couple, because because the title of the show was named after them, but also everything that they're talking about in terms of the past is fascinating to us. Mm-hmm. Whereas when, you know, Rios talks about his past, we're like, okay, well, does the show have any time to give weight to this character? No, because it's Picard's journey.
And I think that's actually a very, very good point, though. Is like, how much time do we really have to devote to these supporting characters when we know that they're not necessarily intricate, at least at this point, to the overall plot? And this seems to be a very plot-driven series versus kind of a character study over at the French Vineyard right now.
Sure.
So that it's a tough thing. So, okay, I don't want to make it just an episode of us dunking on the series.
No.
I think what's happened, though, Cam, you and I, it's six episodes in, and we're kind of picking at the seams of it, though.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of intriguing stuff that's been going on throughout this episode. Yeah. I want to get into the Borg cube sort of stuff, because I think this is actually what I've been looking forward to the most. I thought it was inevitable that Picard would eventually land back on a Borg cube for the very first time in, like, 25 years. And I thought this was effectively done. Like, usually I kind of cringe when we have, like, you know, stock footage from, you know, like 30 years ago being used. But yeah. This is great. There's a mix of kind of the old Borg look, the new Borg look. We even had a split second appearance of Alice Krieger as a Borg queen, yeah. Which I wanted to jump out of my seat right there. And just I was hoping she'd make a surprise guest appearance or something like that. Do you think that they served one Locutus / Jean-Luc well with his return to the Borg cube and his reactions that he was having to this Waylon?
Oh yeah, for sure. And like when the Borg make sure he doesn't fall off the edge of the platform.
Yeah,
I thought it was, that whole scene was fantastic.
I did too. Like, there was genuine gravitas to this. Like, we all knew that when Patrick Stewart went back to a Borg cube, it better deliver, because like that is what they've been building up to for a long time. Honestly, I was kind of shocked we got it in episode 6. I thought they were going to drag it out a little bit longer, because that's what they've been doing for a while now. And so consider me happy that we ended up here in this episode. But yeah, seeing Patrick Stewart play those moments, and like you could feel, like as you said earlier, like the PTSD of it all and him kind of shutting down, and also the horror of these Borgs, you know, these beings that have been brought back from being assimilated but bear all the physical scars of what's been done to them, which gives it this horror element that I think has always been very present in the Borg and played beautifully in the scene where they're going to help him, but they look terrifying, and he looks terrified.
And that moment where Picard says, yeah, these are the galaxy's victims, but people still view them as monsters, I thought that's a very, very good thing to say, because, like, they are victims. Like, they just keep getting assimilated, and yet, you know, even if you're detached from this, and I think this actually could have been, you know, pounced upon a little bit more with the Seven story last week there. It's like, how well is she accepted into mainstream society when then she's walking around with like Borg implants still on her face, though? And is she really guilty of all this collective consciousness, everything that they've committed? I would say no, that they're not doing it through their own individual volition. I think that's like the kind of intriguing stuff that I want them diving into. And I love that, you know, Jean-Luc was able to bring this up in this episode.
Seven of Nine was blessed, though, in the remaining implants on her face that were left. You look at some of the people being brought out of the process in this one, and you're like, they did not get the Seven of Nine treatment.
Right?
Yeah, the guy who had the Borg implants still in his jaw, like that's a tough go.
That's
right,
rough.
There.
Yeah, a lot of them had holes in their heads.
Yeah.
What would you guys have added if you could? Something harkening back to older episodes.
Okay, so it was interesting. During one of those quick flashback sequences, I did notice that there was a shot of the Enterprise E, like a Borg drone going through like a door on the Enterprise E. I'm wondering if maybe they could have made an even more overt reference to the Borg Queen, which makes me wonder, is this all they want to do with the Borg Queen in season one of Picard?
We even went to her chambers.
Yeah, the Queen's cell, as they call it. Like, I don't think they set all that up, and they know how much it means to audiences. And if you're a writer in that room, do you not want to bring back the Borg Queen for another confrontation with Jean-Luc? Like, this has me looking forward very much to possibly the finale. I don't know. What are you guys thinking about the possibility of a BQ return?
I don't know. Has that card been played too many times at this point?
I don't care. I really don't care at this point. Like, whether it's Susanna Thompson, who I think acquitted herself magnificently in Star Trek Voyager, or Alice Krieger, who's done it twice, both in Endgame, the Voyager finale, as well as First Contact, I think there's a reason why this is such an iconic character. I think this, like, it gives Dukat and Khan, like, a run for their money when it comes to all-time villains in Star Trek. And a lot of it just comes down to how much gravity these actresses bring to this character, who has a lot of history with Picard as well.
Well, I mean, has the Borg Queen ever been done badly?
No, never.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it's kind of like Tribbles almost. They've never really messed up with the Tribbles episode. So I think there's a certain bar you got to hit with a Borg Queen, and I think they're up to it. I think that they, if they want to do the Borg Queen, they're going to write a really good Borg Queen, because they're going to want to get, if Alice Krieg is going to play this role again, they're going to want to give her something that makes her want to come back to put up with this hellish makeup.
She told us stories back in Vegas, Cam, about how it was like these 18-hour days over a two-week shoot back in 1995 or 1996, and she decided she just wasn't going to drink any more liquids because the process of going to the bathroom was far too arduous. So she was essentially just being dehydrated all day. Yeah. I think by the time you get to Endgame, she is having like this lengthy rider, like, oh, you want to bring me back? Okay, well, this is what you're going to have to do with this costume. I can imagine if her, like,
all
honestly.
CG.
Oh, I was exactly, I was going to say that exactly. Like, she's wearing like a green suit or something like this, and then they like, can do all the animation that they need.
Or has the Borg Queen, as we know it, evolved completely into something else by now?
Yeah, so what happened? What would happen if Picard saw a reclamated version of her? It's like, oh,
that'd be interesting because
that would be super cool.
I think what we've kind of figured out though is like the Borg Queen is an entity that keeps emerging death after death. So it makes sense that you could have a Borg Queen on this ship who's now reclamated in a different way. Like, I would love to see like Alice Kriga with like her hair down.
That would be more interesting.
Trying to have a conversation with Picard, like like as like an individual, like that would be fascinating to me. I like that idea. That's cool.
I find it very interesting that this whole Borg Queen, all the Borg Queen stuff, really came into play this week in the episode where Soji is activated, which I think is very interesting.
Oh,
there's been a lot of speculation.
There has been, but I'm really thinking about it and. Maddox created this new life form using technology that no one else seems to understand. This perfect merging of, you know, flesh and technology. Isn't that kind of what the Borg Queen is?
Yeah. Yeah. She is the singularity in which, well, like, there's always been debates about the nature and the constitution of the Borg Queen, whether she is a manifestation of the collective or if she is, like, an individual entity giving directions to the collective. I have always thought of her as the former, but I'm wondering what your guys' thoughts are with regards to her own constitution.
It's always been a little ambiguous, and they've liked to play it that way because she does acknowledge that she was assimilated, but I can believe that the individual that was assimilated became basically like a blueprint for a creation that could keep recreating time and time again.
And I think it was early on. I think she said she was like species 1, 2, 3 or
something
like
that. It was a very low number.
Very
low,
yeah.
So I can totally buy that because otherwise it makes it a little confusing as to why she keeps getting blown up time after time and coming back.
So I'll just point out this thing. You and I were planning on going to the Las Vegas convention and we noticed that today, as of our recording on the Thursday night that Star Trek Picard airs. What is this one called? The Invisible Box?
The Impossible Box.
The Impossible Box, yeah. Alice Kriga has just been announced to attend the convention. She's got a very smart agent who knows that she could collect a whole lot of autograph money and photo op money if she goes just after appearance on Star Trek Picard. I don't know, just speculation on my part.
That said, I wonder if she wouldn't have shown up now for the convention if she was on the show. It would be more like wait till the show wraps and the character pops up, then she's announced.
Right.
That could be it.
That might be more likely.
But you know what? She did get a split second appearance on Star Trek Picard. So if she's not coming back, maybe she's just banking on this.
You know? Someone asks her, they're like, wow, we were really excited to see you in Picard. She's like, pardon?
Star Trek what?
Yeah. I was going to ask you guys what the, so I guess it's the Queen Chamber Picard transports out of. That has some like special
transporting
40,000 light years power.
Well, I mean, the Borg assimilate technology from all over the place, so I feel like they would probably have a teleporter that's much better than, or the transporter that's much better than what, you know, Starfleet would have.
Right.
I can buy that.
But they said it was only for the Queen cell, so I wonder if it's kind of very limited power and proximity there. So, because then you get to the point, like, why don't the Borg just, like, have, like, armies of drones, like, jump on different planets? Mm-hmm. Did you guys notice the name of the planet they're off to?
I was going
to
ask what that was. I missed it.
Rurapente, from Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, the Klingon prison planet. It was also featured in Star Trek Enterprise. So I'm very much looking forward to Rurapente once again being featured in Star Trek, hopefully next week.
Does this one have any similarity with the double moon lightning?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
I thought it was, I had Pente on the end. I thought it said something else at the start.
It'd be kind of mean of them to have Pente at the end and it not be Rurapente, which is such an iconic, is it a moon or is it a planet? I don't recall exactly.
I can't recall that.
Maybe Picard was just doing another French accent and you heard something completely wrong.
That'd be so sad if I'm totally off at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I thought it started with an N, but with a Pente on the end. I may be completely wrong.
Do you think they would name a planet Nurapente and I
guess we'll find out next week.
Yeah, annoy us. I could be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure that they said Rurapente. So yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. But ultimately, though, as we kind of continue forward with the storyline, did you guys buy why one Elnor would stay behind?
No.
I didn't even understand why he was staying behind.
No sense to me.
There was not a raging army like stopping Picard from doing anything.
Yeah.
It's like an empty hallway. And he's like, you got to go. You got to go. I got to fight them off.
And like, even if like he went through with Picard and Sochi, like, I don't know. Isn't it possible for Hugh to just kind of scramble the coordinates and they don't know where they're going?
Hugh's like the director. Why can't he walk out and just be like,
don't know?
Yeah, don't know.
Yeah.
He wasn't down that way.
Mm-hmm. So.
Like, none of that made any sense. I felt like that was set up very poorly.
And so it makes me wonder, like, why do they want to keep one Elnor on the Borg cube? I'm guessing so it's he can interact with other Romulans in this situation, but it didn't feel natural to me.
Yeah, who's left on the cube that Elnor seems like he would be, I don't know, having a relationship with Narek. In coming episodes? Is Narek sticking around, though?
Narek and Rizzo.
Oh, do you think they're sticking around?
They may not stick around, but they'll probably take him.
Yeah.
With them, yeah, right? I think he's got to interact with them at this point. I'm hoping Hugh has at least one more episode in him. I'd be disappointed if we don't get to see a Hugh and Seven interaction at some point this season.
Yeah, I would like to see more Hugh. I thought Jonathan Delarco was really good in this episode.
Well, thank you.
And I actually thought they gave him and Picard more interesting material than they gave Picard and Seven, which was kind of surprising.
Yeah.
I mean, they do have more relationship from TNG, but nonetheless.
Yep.
And did you buy, though, that Picard would, like, give Hugh a bear hug upon seeing him? Like, that was not exactly their relationship where we left off with him in Descent Part 2.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. But, I mean, Picard has gotten nostalgic in his old age.
That's true. Look, if Patrick Stewart wanted to give me a bear hug, I'd be all for it. So how can I resist?
Do you think the writers ever considered having Hugh ask how Geordi is?
No, I don't think that'll ever come up, though. I think Geordi, despite being Hugh's best friend in the whole wide world, has long been forgotten about in his memory. Although, Jonathan Delarco, that man is what, like 50 at this point? He looks like assimilation has done him well, I'll say that.
Yeah. I think like the visual look of Hugh is great, and this character has been given more than I ever thought he would be given to do. When he was announced as joining the cast, they kind of announced him the same time as, like, Jerry Ryan. And you're like, okay, I'm sure he shows up in, like, one episode. And they're like, hey, Hugh. He's like, hey, guys, what's going on? Moving on. See you later. Yeah.
Like, just, like, an image, like the queen.
Like a painting on a wall. But it's like a motion painting. It's like a Harry Potter painting where it's moving as they walk by.
Hey, Hugh.
Yeah. I actually thought that that's what they would give him to do. And that, like, Seven was going to be the one that was going to be getting all the really juicy material in the show.
Kind of what I thought as well. I didn't think it was going to be a Seven of Wolfenstein sort of drop.
Right, she'll be back.
For sure.
She will.
For sure, yeah.
But no,
like other cybernetic organisms, yes, she will be back.
But no, I genuinely thought it was really moving stuff to see Hugh take Picard through his own journey and guide him around the Borg cube. Like, I thought there was just a lot of, you know, dramatic heft given to just these two guys walking around a Borg cube just by the two characters who are doing it.
Yeah, no
like
kidding.
They brought a lot to the scene and played off each other very well.
Yeah. So maybe other stuff that I wouldn't mind getting into, though, is one of our favorite sequences of the entire episode, 37 months.
Yes, I wanted to talk about that.
Probable date, 37 months.
I think it's really, really tragic that Voyager took the episode The 37s.
We could have just called it this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Waylon, you said something funny right before we started recording with regards to this particular sequence. Could you elaborate on that for the listeners?
So Soji says, I've scanned everything and nothing's older than 3 years, and 37 months is older than 3 years. Yeah. I was like, I'm gonna pick that a little bit.
I'm curious about her journey from here on out, where she's slowly realizing that whatever her existence is, she's going through an existential crisis right now. Like, why is everything that she knows only 37 months old? She has to try to figure it out. She's literally having these dream recollections of being on this work table where she's the puppet. I wonder what that means. You know, I think Picard's going to be having an interesting conversation with her on hopefully the Klingon prison planet. I don't know. We'll find out next week.
Yeah, I'm just very thankful to get Soji out of the Borg cube, because yes. I want to see her with other characters, having conversations, and actually learning about her as a character, as opposed to just being veiled in mystery and having like these mm-hmm. enigmatic talks with Narek.
The super toxic boyfriend, he's like, that's not my name. Yeah. As he like wanders out of
My name is Ryan. did you guys have better memories. In any of the flashbacks, you know how there's always like a 12 years at the bottom and it says like where they are.
Yeah.
Did you notice any that were about 3 years?
No. So the first flashback we ever got with Star Trek Picard, it was, again, Picard dreaming of his time back on the Enterprise D.
Mm-hmm.
And again, our first kind of dream flashback again, it's all about Sochi, who doesn't actually have any real flashbacks to speak of, though. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. Every single episode, they've been doing some sort of flashbacks at all. So this one, they're very, I think, being kind of oblique about it all, but you know, the deal is she's just dreaming, even though she is dreaming of her childhood. But, that kid, though, what a dead ringer for Issa Briones, who's playing
in terms of similarity.
Yeah, they look identical.
Yeah.
Did they Irishman up Issa Briones for this one? Was that it?
This was the most expensive episode of Star Trek ever made.
Yeah, I read that somewhere. That's exactly what they
thought. Brent Spiner got a good deal on his on his makeup there. Huh?
I thought it was really cool seeing Joe Pesci as a Borg.
But like, there were some flashbacks in previous episodes where it would say like, 12 years ago.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure.
And you guys didn't see any that were specifically around this time.
I'm just curious.
Not in this episode, but just any episode.
In Star Trek history?
In Picard. In any of the Picard episodes, did you see some that lined up with that period?
Well, we had the Raffi flash, or the three-year period. Everything's just going, it's all around like that 13, 14-year period. Right.
Like the synthetic attack.
Yeah, are all the flashbacks, but nothing just like, 3 years ago. I'm curious, why do you ask? Why are you wondering about like kind of like what's been going on as Soshi's been created?
Yeah, I mean, exactly that. Just trying to get the puzzle pieces together. Maybe the father is shown in one of those flashbacks and you can, use your imagination to unblur his face.
Yeah. Are you just craving for more Bruce and Agnes cookie flashbacks? is that it?
Yes, that was fantastic.
That may have been 3 years ago.
I don't know, like the, could that have been 3 years ago? That's what I'm wondering.
Could have been.
It would be interesting to watch those again and be like, oh my gosh, okay.
Although when I watched that episode a second time, I didn't quite figure out the timelines involved. Because remember, like Maddox said that they destroyed his lab.
Mm-hmm.
They used like this sort of like, it sounded as if the method they used to destroy his lab is very similar to that kind of acid spit sort of thing that we've been witnessing. And which tells you, so maybe the Romulans are involved with this. But it sounded like timeline-wise, like he created the androids after his lab was destroyed. But I thought that the labs were all closed up after the synthetic attack. Like, I'm just kind of confused because, like, Agnes has always been going on about how all they can do are real, like, theoretical things for the time being. I don't know. I was a little. I kind of stumbled out of the gate trying to figure out exactly how the timelines line up in this case.
And why was Bajazel, or whatever, how are you saying her name? Why was she in there? Why was she involved? Wasn't he working for the Federation? Why would he need money from her?
I guess he was on the lam. He didn't. I think what we're getting at though is like there is a conspiracy that the parts of the Federation are complicit in. So he doesn't trust them. So he's on kind of the edges of space. He's in between. I guess Free Cloud is one of those worlds, not part of the Federation, not part of the Romulans.
Is it in the Beta Quadrant?
Yes, it is.
Neutral Zone?
I think it's on the edge of the former Neutral Zone and out of the territory of the Fenris Rangers, as they established as well.
So, yeah.
Yeah. The fact that we have to do so much math in our head.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite thing about a series like this. Like, I just kind of crave some of those, like, Cam, when we were watching The Mandalorian.
Yes.
Were you ever confused about the overall plot line?
Not for a second.
Not for a second, you know. I hope Picard can learn from the simplicity of storytelling.
Yeah.
People were over the moon about Mandalorian, and it wasn't because of complex details about like conspiracies between Imperial forces and the Rebel Alliance. You know, it's like, okay.
Well, even like past Star Trek shows, I don't recall being confused.
No.
So it's definitely somewhat.
What about Masks?
Okay, I was definitely confused in Masks. That one, yeah, okay, you're right.
Okay.
But yeah, in terms of like kind of like the long form storytelling that Star Trek has done in the past, I never sat through DS9 or the Zindi War or anything like that being like, wait, how does this connect? It all made very clear sense.
Yeah.
So I just think, you know, and you've commented on the past, it's like this new type of Star Trek, they want to constantly keep the viewer going, I don't know what's going on, which I don't know if that's a great thing.
I'm just positive, though, and based on our experience watching or rewatching Discovery Season 2, that's when we just binged it. Like, we didn't have to wait week to week. I get the sense that Picard is going to play so much better when you can just sit down for a weekend and watch 10 episodes in a row, and a lot of the stuff that we're getting hung up about. And I don't, like, you and I, like, we go watch movies all the time. We don't kind of nitpick, like, stupid, silly stuff, you know? And
right.
So that's not the kind of, like, a critique that we're trying to give here, but this is stuff that makes us kind of scratch our heads as we're watching it week to week. And I think this will play better, you know, just all in a row. That's my guesstimate.
Yeah. It feels like a show that would have benefited from just dropping the whole thing at once, but I completely understand why financially they don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, if CBS All Access, if that's the model they want, it makes sense for them. So I'm not going to,
how many,
you know, criticize them for that.
Are there going to be
10?
10? Okay.
Yeah, so we've only got 4 episodes left. We're already getting the sense, you know, in this last half that they are kicking things into gear at this point, which I'm very thankful for. It felt like a little bit of a wheel spinning last week to a certain degree, yeah. at least for me. So I'm curious where it goes from here. One final thought for me, and then maybe I'll throw it over to you guys, though. But this whole discussion about Rizzo referring to, or no, it wasn't Rizzo. I think it was the sub commander referring to people as round ears. Round ears aren't allowed here.
Right.
So we've got the Andorians calling humans pink skins. We've got the Romulans calling them round ears. And I was like, well, it's good that humanity has evolved so much. But then I remembered in Broken Bow, one young archer was calling Saval Ambassador Pointy. So I was just like, okay, so great to know that really offensive racism still persists
tables have turned
400 years. Yeah. So
yeah, that's still going strong, it seems, in the Star Trek universe. But they make it cute. So people go like, well, that's not offensive.
Oh, there you go. There you go. How could it be?
Yeah.
No, remember when the finale of Enterprise and you have Shran's daughter?
Yeah.
She has to do like the toddler voice, like, thank you, pink skin. And like, how can you not think it's cute except the fact that it's racist?
Yeah. And everyone's like, ah, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah.
Classic.
And
out of the mouths of babes.
All I can say, though, is like, it's very telling that we never had an Andorian interact with, say, Travis Mayweather or Hoshi Sato.
Right.
I think it's just like, if you think I'm overreacting to this whole pink skin thing,
yeah.
Let's kind of think about like other possibilities within Star Trek Enterprise. Like,
right.
It is a very problematic thing that was going on.
Problematic stuff on a older Star Trek show.
I'm
not familiar with this concept.
I'm shocked. Guys, look, for me, I like this episode like so much more than the previous one. I was just, I was getting frustrated with the series. You and I were really picking at the seams last week, Cam. This one, it makes me feel as if like there is kind of like this journey that they're going on. The writers really have locked down what they want to be doing with the Picard character at the very least and his journey. I'm excited to see him finally interacting with Sochi, trying to help her realize her own existence in a way as she's been struggling. Thank God. She's no longer in the presence of Narek.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
For how long?
I don't know.
Minutes into the next episode, she's back. Okay. The final episode of the season is like the end of Titanic. He's like in the cold water. She's like, I'll never let go.
I'll never let you go, Ron.
Yeah, and then she throws her twin necklace out into outer space.
No, it's her as an old woman going, dropping it off the edge of a ship.
Okay.
I mean, there's no coming back from that. He tried to kill her. Like,
he
what?
Did? No, there's no. We had wondered if there'd be a redemption arc. I still think there could be.
I think there could be, but you know what? If there's not, I'm glad in that I was saying when we had the podcast with Barry Link, I think that was episode 5, I felt like I could completely predict, in episode four, I should say, Cam, that I could completely predict where his arc was going.
Yeah.
With him trying to kill her with radiation, and her punching through the floor of the board cube.
Hulk smash.
She-Hulk smash. Yeah. I'm like, okay, well, now the show's keeping me guessing, which I think the show needs to do more. Like, a lot of times I kind of feel as if I can guess what's going to happen next. Mm-hmm. This is an episode, many times I was not able to do that, which I really like.
This was the second of the twin activation moments we've gotten. Which one do you think was more effective between the two?
Oh, episode one, for sure. Like, yeah, look, she's, like, totally going, like, River from Serenity on everybody in this situation, so...
And because you didn't expect it as well?
I think that's a very good point, though, is, like, I didn't know what her deal was. I had no idea that she was an android or Data's daughter or why she was even activating until, like, you know, 90% into the episode.
So. Yeah, that's why it didn't have a lot of impact for me, because she, like, I expected it to arrive.
I mean,
she's going to get out of this by activating.
I was kind of having a back and forth conversation in my head when he's letting in the radiation. I thought, well, that would be pretty bold if they killed this character in episode six, because we never would have seen that coming.
She has a triplet.
Oh, my God. The orchids. They were telling us from the beginning.
Played by Brent Spiner.
I was going to say, it's Brent Spiner. In one of the outfits from Fistful of Data's.
Hey, Narek.
That would be great. But no, like, I thought that moment, it just needed more attention to it. And there wasn't a lot, because you're like, this character is not dying in this way.
Yeah.
There's just no way. You know, it was fine. But definitely the first time was better. You know, I don't know. Like, the whole, like, androids who become, like, martial arts warriors thing is a little goofy. That's not something Data did, for God's sakes.
What was the Mario Van Peebles movie?
Solo?
Solo, yeah.
Yeah. From 1996.
There you go.
No one remembers that movie.
I thought you were talking about Han Solo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or what about Free Solo? Did you ever see that?
Yeah.
You and I saw it.
Sorry, yeah, we saw it together. You, me, and Cam. Yeah, the three of us did.
What the hell?
Sorry about that.
You can remember every Star Trek name out there. You can't remember us going to the movie.
I apologize. I do apologize.
Priorities.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts from you, Waylon? Are you excited about, you know, the final four episodes? Like, does it feel like Picard's on a trajectory you're excited for?
Yep, absolutely. Now that all the characters sort of have this confluence, I think we can kind of move on away from exposition land and slow, drawn out love stories. So, yeah, definitely.
Is there any characters in particular that you want to see more from?
Okay, so I hated Elnor at the beginning.
Yep.
And I actually kind of like him now. Like, I don't know. I want to see how... I'm curious to see how he's going to talk to Narek. I'm very certain he will.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be the most interesting dynamic, personally.
The next episode starts with his corpse on the ground. They're like, he fought valiantly.
He did not see that. Narek.
Narek just walks past him. And it's like, who's that?
I don't know.
Do you think it'd be great if Raffi started calling him J. Elnor?
I guess.
Anyway, Cam, final thoughts from you on this one.
Yeah, like, I thought this was a solid episode. I don't think it's the best one yet. I think the pilot was better. And I think episode three was very strong.
It was episode three that we liked.
Yeah, one and three, I think, are the strongest for me so far. But this was definitely a bounce back from last week where, I mean, after last week, I was like, I don't know about this show. Like,
I had
I'm getting really concerned.
Same here.
But this one is definitely like, okay, if we can connect the pieces to the end, we could have a really satisfying ending. And, you know, if you can finish strongly, no one really cares that much about the start. No one, you know, talks about the, say, the 2012 Avengers movie and is like, remember that awesome chase scene with Nick Fury at the start of the movie? No, they always talk about the Battle of New York because that's what matters, right? It's like that's where it all comes together and that's what everyone walks away from the movie.
Well, I'm a way bigger Maria Hill fan than you are, Cam, so there.
You keep sending them your letters for the spinoff. Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. We'll have videos up again tackling some elements of the latest Picard episode. And we've had some really good feedback on the last couple, for sure.
go to YouTube as well. We've got our day and date sort of videos going up. So look, you'll have our immediate thoughts and everything. So those are great to follow. We've been getting a lot of views from that. So yeah, guys, check us out on YouTube too.
Okay, you can, of course, find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Vision Obscured by Orchids Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P, or T, T as in Topless Soccer, O-N.
And what about you, Waylon?
I don't know, nothing.
You do have a game though, right? Maybe you could talk about that?
Yeah, I'm a game developer making a game called Odd Realm, and you can see that on Twitter at Waylon, W-A-Y-L-O-N, Snedker, S-N-E-D-K-E-R.
Awesome. Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.